Welcome to Audiology Mastery, where we discuss how audiology and hearing aid practice owners can increase revenue, improve patient and employee satisfaction, and live a better, more balanced life. I'm your host, Kevin St. Clergy, and today I'm joined by Amit Gosalia, founder of Audboss and a private practice owner. Amit, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kevin.
I know a lot of people already know who you are, but I'm just curious. I don't think you and I have ever talked about this. What inspired you to pursue a career in audiology, and how did your journey lead you to success in private practice as well as Audboss?
Sure. That's a great question. So I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. I was born in Brooklyn. My dad was a cardiologist. He's retired now. And he had his own private practice. And so when I finally got into college, undergrad, you know, I had pursued medicine, decided to go a different way, took about a year, 2 years off. But I met a dispenser, a hearing aid dispenser in North Phoenix. And at the time, I was kind of doing this weird job where I was doing marketing at this company. I have no marketing background, but essentially it was like door-to-door sales. Like, hey, go and talk to these people about their little ads that they're putting in the Arizona Republic, which is a newspaper in Phoenix. And she had this little $4.99 hearing aid ad, and they said, here, go talk to her. So I went, talked to her. I was like, hey, maybe we can do something better. But it was neat because she had a lab coat on. She had a stethoscope around her neck. And I thought, what do you do? And what are the requirements? So after she told me, there's no college experience needed, you can just go and sell hearing aids, I thought, this is kind of interesting. And the thing that caught my ears were, pardon the pun, is that she goes, I'm kind of like a doctor, right? Now, that's what got me into the profession. I end up learning about audiology after that, probably a couple of years after that, and went over to Arizona State University and took an intro to audiology course. My 2 years of hands-on training in this clinic was equivalent to 1 day at the intro to audiology course. So that's when I realized, wow, there's so much more to audiology. And so I went down that path. Now, fast forward, I never went back to that hearing aid dispenser, started working in a clinic in Sun City West in a private practice. And the plan was to buy her out after 5 years. Well, unfortunately, about 4 years in, her husband tragically passed away from lung cancer. So she needed to continue owning that practice for a lot longer. And I had my own professional goals and personal goals I wanted to do. So I made her a pretty good deal, I thought, which was a 12-month offer. I said, I'm going to work for you for another 12 months. During that time, I'm going to find something else, but I'll stay with you for 12 months. During that time, I had an opportunity that fell into my lap, and it was up in Vancouver, Washington. Now, Vancouver, Washington, not Vancouver, Canada. This is the original Vancouver, as they say. It's in Southwest Washington, right across the river from Portland, Oregon. And this practice was a pretty old practice, one of the first private practices in the state of Washington. So the deal was that I would join and I would eventually buy them out after 5 years. So they had about 5 staff members and 4 audiologists, so pretty big team. But when you look at the numbers, they were only generating about $500,000 in revenue. And I thought, something's not right here. How are they paying everybody? So after about 3 years of working with them, they had let go of the 2 audiologists. So it was 3 audiologists and 4 or 5 staff. You know, after about 3 years, I said, I can't wait 5 years. I got to make my move now. So I made the offer and took some time, and eventually I ended up buying them out. That's where the initial private practice ownership came in. And I had changed things around, basically turned everything around 180 degrees. A lot of out-of-the-box ideas, a lot of things that worked. There were a couple of things that didn't work, and hey, you live and you learn. But that's where I came up with all these growth strategies, and we tripled the revenue. Now, when I say triple the revenue, I'm talking about gross revenue, not net revenue. And even net revenue, of course, increased. But the idea here is that I had let go of everybody. So we cleaned house. And when we cleaned house, you got to start over, right? So got rid of all the staff one by one, got rid of the 2 providers who were the previous owners. We just parted ways. It wasn't working out. So basically, it was me, my wife, who was my partner in the business. And then we hired somebody up front. We were cruising, but we were working very, very hard. I know, Kevin, we've known each other for a long time, but when we finally started hanging out more, I was probably at my peak in terms of weight. I mean, I was eating and not eating healthy. I wasn't living healthy, working 12, 13, 14-hour days, 6 days a week, and that wasn't very healthy, but we were really cruising. We were the largest clinic in Vancouver, Washington, arguably even Portland, Oregon, and that's what got me going down this pathway. And then eventually, in 2018, a friend of mine who I met in Minnesota at an event said, hey, I want to create this page where we can get private practice owners together. And it was funny because I was already in the process of working on getting a conference together just in California, just for private practice owners. And so she and I, her name is April Royan. She's now retired because she's so old. Of course, I'm kidding. She retired at like 40. But the idea is that she and I created this page and started it, and it grew very, very quickly to now we have over 1,300 private practice owners. And we hold a conference once a year, which you spoke at this past year. And I'm looking forward to hearing you speak this upcoming year. So that's my story.
Let's go back to what you did, because this is for the private practice owners. What would you say are the top three things that you did? Replacing staff is always difficult. I don't know about you, but every time I have to, unfortunately, let somebody go, it's usually a couple glasses of wine, maybe four, and a shot of tequila. It's not something I enjoy doing. I had a mentor of mine one time tell me, well, Kevin, I'd be more worried if you did enjoy it. So besides rebuilding your staff, which is critically important, what would you say are the top three things you did? And if you want to mention those as one of the top three things, go for it.
The fundamental thing is efficiencies. I think every private practice owner wants to cut costs and gain revenue, profitability, right? So the cutting the team, it was definitely not a fun thing to do. It was not easy. I had personal relationships with every single person, but it became obvious that they weren't running the practice the way it was supposed to be run. And I'm not saying they did anything wrong. It's just my philosophy was, hey, I need to be able to be as profitable as possible because I have a young family. I got this beautiful wife, beautiful daughter at home, young daughter. I have to be able to put a roof over our heads and put food on the table. So when I realized that they weren't performing the way I wanted them to perform, and even after some trainings, they still kind of went back into old habits, that's where I realized that, you know what, I had to cut ties. But I wouldn't say that's the number one thing. I think the number one thing was really understanding what the goals were. Your audience, and you, of course, know what SMART goals are. S-M-A-R-T, specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, and time-bound. Then there's another term called SMARTER goals, which adds an E-R to it, which is evaluate and reward. And of course, the audiology in me, I had to add an A in there, so I call them SMART EAR goals. So what SMART EAR goals are, the E-A-R is evaluate, accountability, and reward. And I'm not going to go into that whole topic, but the idea is that every project that I do, every business that I've started, I've laid out my SMARTER or SMART EAR goals and really understood that, hey, here's point A, here's point B. How do we get to point B and achieve all the goals that I want to achieve? So that has to be number one. And the accountability part that I added in is really, you know, we want to win, right? We want to hit our goals, but I found that, you know what? Sometimes we just don't hit it. So somebody has to be accountable. And I think accountability is a huge thing. That's number one. Number two is that marketing is extremely important and the ROI in marketing is very important. Tracking KPIs, right? Key performance indicators are extremely important. I used KPIs in my practices for everything that we did, every marketing event, every patient that I saw. So I had numerous formats of my KPIs and really tracking where the money's going and where the money's coming in from. And one of the big things that I really did not enjoy as much, which sounds funny because I do love to speak in front of an audience, is I did not love education seminars. We would put out these direct mail campaigns that cost us $5,000 or $6,000. And unfortunately, we wouldn't scrub the list correctly. So people would show up for this free lunch at a restaurant, which costs hundreds and hundreds of dollars, maybe even in the thousands, just to put on the luncheon. And you get up there, you give your spiel, half the audience are already patients of yours, which you didn't want them coming because they're already patients. And then you get one person or two people who come in for an appointment and maybe one purchase from you. That to me was a terrible ROI, right? So the marketing aspect is huge. I started transitioning it more into relationship building. And I think that aspect of marketing is something that's still missing. I see it every single day on social media. People call it physician marketing. Well, if you're going to make it transactional, then their referrals are going to be transactional or they're just not going to respect the referrals. I talk about physician relationship building. I'm friends with hundreds of physicians around Los Angeles. And because I'm friends with them, I know that my friends will refer to me and I'm going to refer to my friends. You know, I have friends all around the country who are audiologists. And as soon as somebody says, hey, anybody knows somebody in this city? And if I know one of my friends is there, I'm going to say, hey, go to this person. They're the best. And that was a huge, huge positive thing. I would take physicians out to dinner, never talk about audiology, never talk about my practice. It would be more of a cordial thing. And then, of course, they will ask questions about, hey, what do you do? What's your practice? And that's where I'll give them a quick 30-second to 60-second elevator pitch. but then switch right back to, hey, what do you like to do on your, you know, spare time? Golf, you know, whatever. So that part of it is very important. And I think that's something that's really missing. And that relationship building was one of the biggest keys to our success. And I think the final thing, I already mentioned it, but efficiency is cutting costs. I love to spend money. It's just in my nature. I like to spend money. But the reality is that understanding there's a value to what you're spending your money on. We would go to nonprofit events, and in my heart, I'm a philanthropic person. Whether I have money or not, I can either go and spend the time and work at these places, or I can give my money, or I can influence other people, right? So the three ways to give to a nonprofit are time, money, and influence. Money was something that I started to get very quickly once we were owners. I was able to donate money and go to these events and just become friends with the community, back to the relationship building. And I think just understanding that if I'm going to spend $1,000 at that event, it's because in my mind, I knew my mindset was, hey, I'm going to go and do a good thing for this organization. The second thing in my mind is to really go build relationships so that they understood that, hey, I am the best option when it came to hearing tinnitus and hearing aids, of course.
I love what you said, because I'm finding the same thing. I always tell people the biggest competitive advantage that you have in any business is the quality and quantity of the personal relationships you take the time to build. But I'm always leaving out physician marketing. So you're absolutely right. Now, going back to where I'll help people, I always ask people, all right, congratulations, you got your first appointment with the doctor. Have you mapped out the conversation and how it's going to go? And people are like, what do you mean? I was like, you don't go in there and just wing it. But they always forget. They're like, well, I'm going to tell them what I do and how I get referrals. And I'm like, no, get to know them first. Ask them about their practice, what they like doing out of work. So thank you for bringing that up. It's brilliant.
That's 100% correct. It's one of those give versus take conversations. If I'm going to go into a physician's office with all my cards and white papers and research, hey, send me your patients. Hey, I want to take. Instead, how about I give? Hey, what kind of patients do you take? What insurances do you take? How can I help you? I might throw in there, hey, thanks for your referrals. I want to help you. How can I help you? Right? So 100% correct.
That's one of my favorite ways. I got a few physicians on the phone. I call Greg.
Frazier,
thank you. He's like, do this, call that account and say, listen, I have a lot of patients that come in and they don't have primary care physicians. I'm not comfortable referring to someone I've never met. Can we set up a time to talk?
Perfect.
And it worked so well, especially for the one I was calling him for 6 weeks who never would return my call. And they all of a sudden went, yeah, sure, come on in the morning. I'm like, really? Great. But it was a good lesson.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's keep going on the private practice track here. What do you think was the biggest challenge you had as you started to grow?
It sounds silly, but managing the growth. Number one, we ran a very lean team, as I mentioned. There were a couple of community colleges nearby that had administrative assistant programs, and they needed hands-on experience in offices. So the great thing was I don't want to call it free labor, but I basically had these interns who would be there for 3 or 4 months helping my patient care coordinator with the front office duties. But we were growing so fast, I didn't have enough time to see patients. And people don't understand until they see what my cycle schedule used to look like. I would see 30 to 40 patients a day. And that's including tests and consults and walk-ins. And I didn't have an audiology assistant or a tech. My front office person would do some of it, which was great. She'd change wax guards and such. But when it came down to, hey, we keep getting all these referrals, and I'll give you a great example. I rented a suite at the Portland Trailblazers. So basically, it was a Tuesday night. The Blazers are playing the Spurs. The idea was that I rented this suite. You get a capacity of 22 people in the suite. So I invited 16 physicians. And now, how did I know who to invite? Well, I stalked them. Now, when I say stalk, I don't mean I was standing outside their offices watching where they go. You just go to their website and look at their bio, and sure enough, most of them will say, oh, I'm a Portland Trailblazers fan, or I like basketball, or I'm into sports or something. Those are the people where I said, you know what? I'm going to go and just go hang out with them. Hey, I've got tickets to this game. Are you interested? It's on a Tuesday in a couple months. Great. I'll send you the tickets. They all came, and a couple of them brought their kids. One person brought their spouse. Perfect. Now, this was not meant to be a pitch, because we have rules with how do we solicit referrals. So I said, you know what? We're not going to solicit any referrals. This is all just friends getting together, watching the game together. Now, at halftime, some people had asked me, hey, can you talk to us a little bit about audiology and hearing loss? So I stood up on the chair, you know, in the suites, they had this living room set up. I stood up on a chair And I basically did a 20-minute ed seminar off the top of my head, off the cuff, because I had nothing prepared. Now, of course, in the back of my head, I was really hoping this would happen, and luckily it did. After that was done, I got down and we all just talked. Nobody went to go watch the rest of the game. We were all in that living room area and we were just socializing and talking. The Wednesday, Thursday morning, we just started getting faxes. And I came in and my staff member, she said, I can't believe how many faxes we're getting. I'm like, how are we going to fit all these people in? So our clinic had two sound booths and two patient rooms. So we rearranged a little bit where we would have patients in every room based on how the schedule was. And I was basically going in and out of every room. It was wild. So managing the growth in terms of the time factor was important. But managing the growth on the financial part, you know, I started seeing all this money. And again, my dad was a cardiologist, so I come from a silver spoon, if you will. So I knew what money was, but I didn't know how to manage my money. And I didn't learn that until probably 5 or 6 years ago, which is too late at this point. But I did sell my practices in 2017. And I realized how much that practice was worth when we sold, and it was worth quite a bit. So managing that growth was tough because the financial part, and then also how do you fit all these people in without adding on additional providers, additional doctors to your team?
As far as 2024 goes, what do you think the biggest challenge for practice owners today are? Because I know you bought another or you own another private practice now, but what do you think the biggest challenge is this year?
I was blessed to come down. I spoke to a lot of audiologists here in the Southern California area in 2017, 2016, just seeing, hey, I'm going to sell my practice up there. We want to move to LA for numerous reasons. I wanted to buy somebody out. And I approached Dr. Jane Rosner, who's my business partner. And I said, hey, I want to buy you out. And she goes, nah, I need 10 more years before I can sell. And I said, okay, well, you know, after a few conversations, I was like, what if I come in and partner with you? And she loved it because I'm more business-minded. She's a great, fantastic provider for patients. So that's our balance. 2024 has afforded us this opportunity to really grow. We say that every year that, hey, we're going to grow, we're going to grow. One of the things that we did, actually, there's probably three or four that I'll probably mention, but the first one is we added a provider. So she was our student first as a third year student at the AUD program at Cal State Northridge. And then she applied to do her fourth year residency here, and we hired her for that. She's so great. Lizette Montez is her name. And then she graduated, and we hired her as a provider. Now, the great thing is that it gives me more of an opportunity to do more administrative stuff, focusing on the growth of the practice. Jane is busy with patients. Dr. Montez, Lizette's busy with patients. So number one is adding that provider. The second thing we did is we diversified our offerings for our patients. So we are strictly focused on hearing tests and hearing aids for so long, which is absolutely great. I love hearing aids. I love working with hearing aids. I think the smiles that we get on our patients' faces when they hear better, I think that's rewarding enough. However, we also know that there are threats, which I don't know if you're going to ask that question, but there are threats to the profession. And the number one threat is third-party payers. There's no question. So we don't participate in any third-party payers, none. And people get concerned that, hey, how are you getting your patients? Well, we're slammed busy and we don't accept any third-party payers. We decided that if third-party payers are going to take over and we are not going to participate because they don't value our time and they pay us pennies on the dollar, why don't we diversify what we're doing? Well, Jane and I both have a history with tinnitus work, so we decided let's add some tinnitus stuff. That's number one. Number two is we started doing some industrial work. So we've got contracts with numerous businesses around big national chains who are headquartered here where we get their employees, we'll do their screenings. But the third one, which I think is one of the biggest, is we added vestibular. And I just worked with Richard Gans recently, which I'm not going to pitch here. I'm happy to share later on social media, but we just developed a more affordable solution to jumping into vestibular. So we added a rotary chair. We have a whole room just set up for vestibular. And that's been a huge thing. It was slow in the beginning and now it's starting to roll.
Are you starting to see some referrals too for hearing aids? Because that's what I've always heard, is it helps you grow both sides.
Yeah. So right now, the honest answer is no. The long term is we think it will. So the way we're approaching it is that when we see a patient who's complaining about their hearing and or they have tinnitus, and then on their questionnaire, they say, yeah, I have dizzy, or they get vertigo, excuse me. Then we're going to probe a little bit in our history and our test. And then we're going to say, you know, why don't we also set you up for this balance evaluation? So right now, that's the pathway, is they're coming in for a hearing test and we're pushing them into vestibular. We also know that we're working very closely with a couple of physical therapists who do treatment, VRT, right? Vestibular rehab therapy, where we can do the diagnostics and we're going to refer to them. So obviously, Kevin, if I gave you a gift, what is the first thing that you think of when you receive the gift? It's gratitude and maybe I need to respond. Same thing as what we were talking about with our physicians, the give versus take. We went out and we reached out and now those physical therapists, we're getting referrals from them. Neurologists, primary care docs, et cetera. So we're working with all these different specialties and really working hard to make sure that, hey, we have a interprofessional collaboration between the two.
Well, it sounds like you and Jane have a successful partnership. And I think you and I have both seen partnerships that don't go well. In fact, you're a coach in the profession, so am I. I've had to clean up a lot of partnerships, but it sounds like you guys did a wonderful job of clearly defining your roles in the practice and what you'll each be doing. Would you say that it contributed to your success, or do you have anything you want to add there?
Defining roles is very important. Role delineation is extremely important. So to give you an example, I gave Lizette, who's our new audiologist, the management of the vestibular clinic. I'm not a vestibular person. I like the idea, but that's not my focus. It's not an area that excites me personally. But I know our patients need it. So I know that we have to offer it. She loves it. She knows a lot about it. So does Jane. So I said, here, you're going to be the supervisor of the vestibular clinic, defining that role for her so that everyone's not putting their fingers in the pot. When it comes to Jane and myself, you hit it on the head. We've developed the right formula. You know, I'm like the Scottie Pippen of her Michael Jordan, if you will. At least that's the way I like to think of it. The idea is that she created this practice back in 2001. We're 23 years into this practice and still thriving and growing quite a bit from her being the only person to now we've got three providers and staff. She's great with patients. And I'm not saying anything wrong here or I'm not telling you any secrets here, but she doesn't enjoy managing the business. I enjoy the business side of things. I'm very good with my patients as well. But there are times when some of my patients will see her and they like her better. I'm like, fine with me.
Go for it. Yeah.
Nobody in our clinic has any egos. In fact, I always joke. I'm like, please go see them instead of me. But the idea is that we've set our roles up so well that I'm almost office manager, if you will. And that's my portion of ownership of the clinic. She's seeing patients 40 hours a week, making sure that the clinic stays afloat. So yeah, we've done a very good job of doing that. And then also with our team as well, we have a billing care coordinator, our patient care coordinators up front. We have an ototech who does the vestibular stuff. So everyone's got their own roles and responsibilities very defined. So it's been a good formula.
That's great. And we encourage people to do the same. I had a partner for 15 years. I just had a client recently who was like, partnership isn't working out. And I was like, well, show me how you guys have clearly defined your roles in the organization. And they said, what do you mean? Wrong answer. So we went through the exercise of how to do that. I think they can make it work, but I know there's a lot of people asking me about partnerships. So thanks for diving into that. If you're an audiologist who wants to grow your practice, we've got a free expert guide to help you achieve your goals. It's called The Only Thing. This expert guide is the only thing you need to increase appointments, sales, and profits for your audiology and hearing aid practice. The Only Thing will show you how to increase new patient calls by 5 to 57 a month, schedule more new patients each week, help more people, and increase revenue. It's the best resource I know for growing your audiology practice. Get your free copy at medpb.com/mastery. The link is also in the show notes. Back to the show. For somebody who's struggling with their practice, we've talked a lot about how successful you are and what you've done, and you've helped a lot of people. But there are some people that I know you and I both run into who are struggling with their practice. What advice would you give them?
I want to give you the right answer here. And the reality is that there's no perfect solution. What works for me in Los Angeles is not going to work for, she's very successful, so I'm not picking on her, but Bartlesville, Oklahoma, right? She's done very well there. Or even my old clinics in Vancouver, Washington. You think of Vancouver, Washington, if you look at a map, it's a small kind of border town, but there's a lot of wealthy people there because if you live and work in the state of Washington, there's no state income tax. And then if you go and shop in Oregon, which is a 5-minute drive across the border, you don't pay any sales tax. So it's a very attractive place. But that's a small town. And we were generating seven figures in revenue very easily. I mean, on our worst year, we were still in seven figures with one provider, one staff person, and my wife, of course, who was helping with the management. The idea is that I think I was even more successful there financially than we are here in Los Angeles per doctor. And it's because small town effects versus big town. I used to look at one of our buddies out on the East Coast in New York, New Jersey area. How come he's doing so well over there and I'm doing exactly what he's doing, but it's not working in Vancouver, Washington? Well, because that style is different. That environment is different. The people are different. I look at, number one, really assessing what you're doing on a day-to-day basis, really understanding your goals. What do you want to achieve? That's got to be a big thing. What are you hoping to achieve? Are you trying to be a $500,000 practice? Are you trying to be a $1 million practice? Do you just need a cheerleader to get on your side and say, hey, you can do it, which is what a lot of companies do right now? Or do you need a partner who can get their hands dirty and get into your practice and really talk to you? Full disclosure, we have a very good partnership with you, Kevin, and what you've built is truly amazing and has helped us out tremendously. I mean, tremendously, from the web to the SEO to the review stuff. We couldn't do that on our own. So that's been a huge thing. So we had to make that decision at some point that, hey, how do we get the right people involved to help us hit our goals? I mean, I'm not going to sit here and go and learn SEO because it's not something I'm interested in learning, or how to make a web page. I made my own web page as kind of a joke at one point, and now it's still my web page for consulting. There's nothing on there except just junk, in my opinion. So the idea is it's not a great website, but my niche was very, very small for that site. Our clinic website drives a lot of traffic. We thank you for that. So really meeting and getting the right partners involved and making sure your team is on the same wavelength as you on, hey, where are we trying to go? What's our trajectory? Is it up, flat, or is it down?
Well, I hear two things. I hear, number one, you have to be honest with yourself and assess your situation. I see a lot of people put their heads in the sand. They're like, I'm not dealing with this. You have to recognize that you're failing and that you need to do something. I learned it years ago. This was probably 20 years ago. First couple of years was rough. Let's face it, back then in 2005, nobody thought old people would use the internet. But I see it in practice owners today, but I also see them when they're ignoring some of where they're at, they're afraid to ask for help. So what I also heard you say was go out and find an expert with whatever you're struggling with, whether it's marketing or practice development. And what I would recommend, and let's see if you agree with this, is I always recommend, well, an old business coach of mine always said, Kevin, I never want to be the smartest guy in the room or gal.
Correct.
Surround yourself with people that are a lot more successful than you. And I've heard people like Eric Sorensen say things like, show me your five closest friends and I'll show you your future. And I think he's right. So any comments on finding the right partner? I always look for, even, you know, when we sold and I had some money to invest and I started looking for people that had a net worth higher than mine to learn from. So that's one example, but thoughts there?
You're 100% correct. You know, I'm not perfect. And I know that a lot of people look up to me and they ask me questions. And there's a reason, and if you don't mind the pitch here, there's a reason why we created Oddboss. And Oddboss, nobody pays to be part of that group, right? It's an open platform for private practice owners to grow from each other. And I do get a lot of messages from people saying, oh my God, thanks to this page, I learned A, B, and C. Thanks to Oddboss, you know, I was able to meet so-and-so. Now we have a mastermind group. Or, you know what? If you're a private practice owner and you're struggling, you don't know who to meet, come to the Oddboss Summit, right? That is the number one way to meet other owners who are in the same position that you are in. Because I know for a fact, I just talked to somebody a couple of days ago. She's like, you know, I want to come. I'm scared to take the days off from my clinic. And I said, you know, you have to invest in yourself. And taking those days off from your clinic and learning from the best is only going to make you better. And I think just taking the 4 or 5 days out of your clinic or the weekend from home will pay off. I don't want to use 10x because that's a different thing, but you know what I mean is you can really grow based on just those meetings. I've met people over the years, audiologists over the years, some who give out a false sense of success and I don't talk to those folks, but there are some true people. And if you don't mind me saying their names, number one is Ross Cushing. One of my good friends, I unfortunately don't get to talk to him as much as I'd like to, but boy, that guy is somebody that I could sit and just learn from And for those that don't know, he's got over 25 locations.
Yeah, he's super successful and he's super nice man.
Smart,
as well.
Nice guy.
He's got
down
a great
to
family.
Earth.
Yep.
Yes, absolutely.
I like Ross because, and I'll tell him that we talked about him. He won't mind. But Ross, congrats on how you do anything is how you do everything. You set the bar for everybody. And he does. He's got a great family. He's got a great relationship. He's got a great business. He takes care of his people with you, 100%.
And the foundation, he's able to give back with his Live Better Foundation. I am sorry, Ross, if that's not the name. But so Ross is great. Whitney Swander in Colorado is another one that I just love.
Great client. Mm-hmm.
And we become very close. Surprisingly, which is always fun to talk about, is one of my former students. He calls me his mentor, Jason Landecker in Minnesota. He calls me his mentor, but I love surrounding myself with him because he's grown to become one of the largest audiology private practice in the state of Minnesota. And I take no credit for that. And I love reaching out and talking to them. These are people who, whether they're older than me, younger than me, it doesn't matter. I'm always looking for that inspiration and motivation. People say, well, to motivate, there's always a motive. To find inspiration, you're being inspired. So let me take out the word motivation. Let's just talk about inspiration. These are folks that inspire me every day to make sure that, hey, what they're doing, I want to be able to do in my life as well. Another friend, Craig, you know, Craig Casper, he's been very, very successful in New York, very close for Natalie Phillips, et cetera. I can go on and name hundreds of people who I love to chat with and connect with because they're all doing amazing things that I know that we can learn from. And I've been in this business for 23 years now, and I'm still learning things on a day-to-day basis.
So one is recognizing where you are, being honest with yourself. Two, investing in yourself, going to conferences, stop looking at short-term fixes. A short-term fix would be to stay in your office, get the $12,000 in revenue for the couple of days you're going to be out, instead of focusing on long-term results. And you may get an idea at one of these conferences or a webinar that you attend or on the Oddboss page or in a mastermind group that you decide to join that can make you another $1 million in your career. And then third, don't be afraid to ask for help on Oddboss or wherever it is you find a lot of like-minded or more successful practice owners that can help you avoid the mistakes they made. Did I get that right?
You summarized it well. I can go on and on talking, so thank you for summarizing.
How do you approach patient care and customer service in your practice to build long-lasting relationships with patients? Now, you talked about the physicians, but talk to me what you do about developing relationships with your patients, because I know you, and I know it's important to you as well.
One of the most important things on patient retention is developing that relationship. And it starts from the first contact, the very first contact with that patient, whether it's email, text, or phone call, doesn't matter, or whatever other way that you encounter this person. The reality is that we believe that we are the highest quality, highest rated clinic in all of Southern California. Now, I hope that everybody who's watching this or listening to this in Southern California says, no, we are. And if everyone does that, the rising tide lifts all boats, right, or ships. The idea is that I really believe that. So from the moment we talk to that first patient, the good news is my patient care coordinator that's here in the office, when we hired her based on her personality, not her resume. In fact, when she first came in, I had her resume face down on my desk, and I just had a conversation, and she was fantastic in terms of personality. There was a second person who was competing against her for the same position who on paper, amazing. But when I met her, I realized she'd be a little rough with patients. So that first contact communication with patients is extremely important. When the patient comes in, do they feel welcomed? Our waiting room is one of the most beautiful waiting rooms out there. We have a brag wall with all of our proclamations we've done for Better Hearing Month. We've got letters from the mayor's office. I've got letters from senators, et cetera, et cetera.
A wall of fame in your office.
It's our brag wall, yeah, our wall of fame, if you will. And so then they come up to the window and our staff are super, super friendly. And I've been very adamant to our team that, hey, just because a patient's having a bad day doesn't mean that you have to reciprocate. We get patients, unfortunately, who are not happy about something that happened in their morning and now they're taking it out on our staff. Our staff are very good at diffusing that. So that's the second thing. The third thing is when they finally come back in, how are we treating our patients? As the doctors, we don't have somebody going out to get our patients. I make it very clear that we walk out, and I'm going in very much a lot of detail here, Kevin, but the idea is that when I go get my patient, I'm going to physically take one or two steps into the waiting room after I call that patient, and I'm going to shake their hand, I'm going to touch their arm or grab their forearm, whatever it is. I'm also going to compliment something about what they're wearing or a brooch or their shoes or something. I got to quickly scan that patient. I've taught hundreds of students, right, that have rotated through my office or been students in a classroom, that if you break down that anxiety that these patients are having in that waiting room, there's a good meme that says you've never questioned your life's decisions until you've been into a sound booth and they show this guy in his fatigues, you know, probably a military guy, ready to push a button. People are worried, right? They come to the office, they're scared about the process, they're scared about me, they're scared about what is the solution going to be? Am I going to tell them they have a hearing loss or they need hearing aids or whatever? So breaking down that barrier in the waiting room, I cannot tell you how effective it is when they giggle or laugh. You can just feel the pressure releasing out of their body. And then I'm going to walk them back. Hey, I'm Dr. Ghassali or I'm Dr. G, whatever I decide to say that day. Come on in. We're going to go back this way. I love your shoes, by the way. They look super comfortable. We go right into our sound booth. And now I'm having casual conversations to get my case history. I don't script it. Because if I script it, it sounds like I'm a robot. I don't want to sound like a robot. And I teach every single student, and I get them before their semester's over, to not script what they're going to ask. Right? If the guy's got a USS whatever cap, most likely he was in the military. So that's going to be a question I'm going to ask. Hey, any military time? I see your cap. Hey, thanks for your service. And that's how I approach it. Now, follow-up care is very important as well, right? And when the patient leaves, we have a beautiful system that, again, thank you, Kevin, you guys set up that when these patients leave, every single patient, whether they liked us or not, get the link to go on to review us. Patients leave us beautiful reviews. We average, you know, I know that there's no way it averages to 5 stars because I know there's a 4 and I know there's a 1 from some random person who we don't know who they are, but it doesn't matter. Right now, if you go on, you'll see we have 5-star ratings, which is great because we get patients who come and say, hey, you know, I found you because I looked at your reviews and it sounds like you guys know what you're doing. The follow-up care, we set up so many follow-ups. For example, when I do a hearing aid fitting, we spend a good 1 hour because we follow best practices. A little shout out to Cliff Olson. We're part of the Hearing Up Network. We follow best practices to the T. And the reality is that patients see the difference. They're like, wow, I've never had so much testing done just for a hearing aid. And I'm like, yeah, it's very important. In fact, we all should be doing this no matter what. And then I see them a week later after they get their hearing aids. And then I see them 2 weeks later, and then maybe 2 weeks later, and then maybe 2 weeks later. And we keep doing that until the patient's doing well. And I make sure they understand that. Because if they understand that, hey, I'm not here for the money, I'm here to take care of you, the money's going to be there. This is a phrase my dad told me years and years and years ago. He goes, if you take care of your patients, the business will come. So we take care of our patients to the highest level of care and, of course, outcomes. And then we see them over and over and over and over again. You get to the point where you know a lot about them. So every time they come in, hey, weren't you going to Morocco for something? You know, because maybe I put that in my notes. And the moment you said, they're like, oh yeah, they forgot that. Yeah, that was between their last. Yeah. And you talk about it for a few seconds. They might show you pictures. That's great. While I'm in the middle of doing something, I'm going to work on the hearing aids and talk about whatever their trip is, et cetera, so we can be more efficient. But I think that personal touch, and it's through everybody in the office. Right? If you go and look at our reviews, Dr. Montez, who's our new audiologist, she's getting more of the positive reviews than even me. It makes me a little jealous, but the reality is that that's great for the practice. I even saw a patient of mine who I fit last year, and he just saw Dr. Montez, and he was leaving. This is on Friday, literally on Friday, about a few days ago. He was walking out, and I was walking out. I was like, hey, how you doing, man? He's like, oh, I'm doing great. I'm like, oh, you saw Dr. Montez? He's like, oh, she is fantastic. And I said, yeah, I think she's better than me. He goes, 100%. And now I can take that as an insult. But I didn't. No, I laughed. I'm like, you are 100% correct. I would always go see her, right? It is that type of experience for that patient to know that, hey, I'm not going to go in there and say, hey, nice to see you. I'm Dr. Ghassali. Or excuse me, you were my patient. I'm going to come and just say hi to you. You're in good hands. I think that is the worst thing you can do for your providers, right? You have new providers and their patients see it. Nobody wants to see me. They're seeing their provider, their doctor. We have faith in our team to make sure that, hey, I have faith in all of them that if they're going to see my patients, that my patients are going to reciprocate and they love us. And I'll tell you, I think our resell rate, if you want to use that term, is about 90% existing patients. You know the numbers better than me. I want to say it's closer to 80-20 is what we're looking at, or 70-30, but...
Well, it depends on how people market. I mean, if they're marketing aggressively to get new patients in, it's 60-40. If they're not, it can be as high as 80-20. Some people are comfortable with just marketing their database and getting the occasional new patient. It's all over the place, really, depending on their goals. But going back to what you said, to summarize again, you're talking about building rapport. And one of the things we do in our coaching programs is if we're bringing new people, making the phone ring, and then we're seeing they're getting appointments, but the revenue and sales are not there, we'll start looking at the counseling process and always encourage somebody to either record or walk me through their process. And it's amazing how many people are like, okay, what's your first question? Well, what brings you in today? I'm like, okay, no. How long have you lived here? Have something on your desk that's about you and your life. So they might ask you, you know, how long have you lived in LA? Oh, geez, I noticed you're in the military. Thank you for your service. When were you in? My dad was in Vietnam in 70, 71. Building rapport, I think, is what some physicians are good. And I always like to ask, what do you like about your physician? He has good what? And they'll say bedside manner. And that's all we're doing here. So I'm glad you brought it up because I think it's a lost art. I don't think a lot of people have been taught sometimes. We get so focused on what we're doing that we forget to be friends with them as best we can and remember parts of their lives. So I also liked your tip about writing some stuff. Hey, how was your cruise? You're putting notes in whatever system you use.
There's two other things. One is that whole white coat syndrome. We don't wear lab coats in our office. In fact, on Fridays, we wear jeans. We call casual Fridays. Most of the folks will wear jeans. I'll wear jeans and a polo sometimes because you know what? My primary care doctor doesn't wear a lab coat. My specialist, I have two specialists that I see as well. They don't wear lab coats. One wears a suit, you know, sports coat, a shirt and slacks. And maybe it's an LA thing, but you know what? In Vancouver, Washington, I never wore a lab coat. I keep looking up over the camera here because my lab coat's hanging on my door. It only comes out one day a year, which is Halloween when we're having some fun. I don't wear a lab coat. When you work with pediatrics, those kids don't like the lab coat. It scares the heck out of them. For adults, I'm casual, right? I'm very laid back. I'm very casual, but not unprofessional. I'm not going to wear torn jeans or flip-flops. But the idea is that professionalism isn't about what you're wearing. And your patients are coming to see you because they know you're hopefully the best. They don't care about what you're wearing. They don't care about the lab coat. And if you say, oh, I wear a lab coat because I'm cold, put on a jacket or a sweater.
I think patients have commented all the time. I think I saw it in your reviews. They love your bedazzled jeans. So on Fridays when you wear your bedazzled jeans, it's awesome.
The headband also, the bedazzled headband. Don't forget that.
The headband.
Yes. It actually matches, you know, that painting behind your head there, actually, all those colors. You know, I'm looking at you and I keep looking over your shoulder because I love that blue and pink and it's purples, right? This is the rapport building. I did this exact thing that I just did with you. I was speaking at the Texas Academy of Audiology a couple of years ago and I made this comment. I said, guys, you know, you have to be able to find something that connects. And I don't like to talk at a podium. So I'm walking in the audience and there's this gentleman there. And I said, hey, by the way, I like your shoes. And he's like, oh, thanks. My wife got them for me. And I was like, oh, sweet. Are they comfortable? And we started talking about his shoes and how his wife bought, and then his wife, there was something about his wife, I can't remember now. There's something about his wife that spurred this secondary conversation. And you can see that when he had his body language like this to this, what do I mean by that? This is closed off. I don't want to hear what you're saying. This is opened up to, I'm open to hearing what you're saying. It was amazing. And then I stopped and I was like, ladies and gentlemen, I just broke the ice with somebody that I don't even know. And the whole crowd, I mean, it wasn't like one of those scenes where everyone erupted and stood up and cheered, but it was just like this gasp, like, oh my God, yeah, obviously that makes sense. I just did it again in Colorado. Same thing. One of my really good buddies, his cousin is also an audiologist and she was there. And I'm just walking. And I was like, oh my God, how do you walk around in those heels? And they were like these big heels with like jewels on them. And same idea, just breaking them down and talking to them and building that rapport. That now we have a connection. And I think that's super important. And I, again, just to belabor the lab coat idea, it's harder to do that when you have a lab coat because now you've created this ivory tower and your patient's sitting down here.
I agree. No, it's a great one. Well, Matt, we've reached the top of the hour, so we're running out of time. Is there anything else you want to mention? I loved your stuff about building rapport, physician marketing, marketing to your database was something else you mentioned, getting in touch with your patients and creating a great experience so they will come back and buy from you again and again. All great stuff, especially with what you're doing with OddBoss. I love it. I appreciate the sacrifices you've made for the profession, but also your friendship with me most of all. So thank you for being here. Appreciate your time.
Hey, I appreciate you and thanks for having me. And I think if there's anybody who's out there who's struggling, who owns their own private practice, find the OddBoss page on Facebook. Again, it's a free page. Or join us this fall as we cruise to the Eastern Caribbean. And we're going to have some amazing sessions there.
It'll be a blast. I'll be there. All right, Amit. Thank you.
Thank you, buddy.